Penguin Random House Audio presents Shiner by Amy Jo Burns. Read for you by Catherine Tabor. For my parents, who gave me everything they never had. The universe is made of stories, not of atoms. Muriel Rukeyser, The Speed of Darkness. True story. Making good moonshine isn't that different from telling a good story. And no one tells a story like a woman. She knows that legends and liquor are best spun from the back of a pickup truck after nightfall, just as she knows to tell a story slowly, the way whiskey drips through a sieve. Moonshine earned its name from spending its life concealed in the dark, and no one understands that fate more than I do. Beyond these hills, my people are known for the kick in their liquor and the poverty in their hearts. Overdoses, opioids, unemployment. Folks prefer us this way. Dumb-mouthed with yellow teeth and cigarettes. Dumb-minded with carboys of whiskey and broken-backed Bibles. But that's not the real story. Here's what hides behind the beauty line along West Virginia's highways. A fear that God has forgotten us. We live in the wasteland that coal has built, where trains eat miles of track. Our men slip serpents through their fingers on Sunday mornings and pray for God to show himself while our wives wash their husbands' underpants. Here's what hides behind my beauty line. My father wasn't just one of these men. He was the best. Since word of his sin spilled down the mountain, folks have split from the highway, hoping to catch a glimpse of a fallen hero. They believe that this miner's outpost, shriveled since the coal barons claimed it 40 years ago in the 1970s, still holds the key to my father's miracles. Welcome to Trap, the new sign outside the city limit says. What it doesn't? Come here to fall in love. Come here to fear for your life. Strangers ask what I can tell them about the snake handler and his wife. They want myths and legends. They aren't tempted by the truth. It's a true story, I begin, roosting in the back of an old truck. I swear it. Then I tell them that these woods can turn eerie or romantic, depending on the company you keep. It's an autumn night, and the fire is lit. Moonshiners sneak in their final runs of whiskey, while young women like me tell old tales. The sun sets early. Along the outskirts of Trap, you'll find me standing in a constellation of four-wheel drive trucks in the woods behind the old Sawwet Motel. The mountains hover at my back. The story of the snake handler's daughter began when I'd just turned 15. I knew little then of the outside world my father kept from me. Ours is an oral civilization, I used to hear him say, and it's dying. He blamed coal. He blamed heroin. He never blamed himself. He thought he had the only tales worth telling. And he never understood what my mother had run from all her life because she'd been born a woman. The truth turns sour if it idles too long in our mouths. Stories, like bottles of shine, are meant to be given away. Part 1. Snake Handler's Daughter. Bread and Ivy. It started with a burn, just like the stories of Moses my father used to tell. Moses, he said, was nothing more than a shepherd hiding in the hills until he scaled a mountain and found a flaming bush. Then he was never the same. My father had a tale just as magical. a story of his own origins as a man of God. He loved to tell it, as much as my mother wished she hadn't ever believed it. For as long as she was alive, she never told me her own story. I used to hear her whisper to her best friend, Ivy, that she wished she'd been known as anything other than Briar Bird's wife. I hated this about our life in the hills. Mountain men steered their own stories, and women were their oars. I asked once if my mother had seen what lay beyond the bluffs, and she led me to the peak of our fields that overlooked the ravine behind my father's snake shed. In the distance, I could see two razorback stone ridges rise from the trees. All my life, these mountains had watched over me. My mother knelt beside me, put her arm around my waist. "There are two ways to see a mountain," she said as she shielded her hazel eyes from the sun. "The view from the top, and the view of the top." Ivy came behind her, three of her boys at her back. "From the top of our mountain, the hills of West Virginia bow at your feet," she said. "But from the bottom, you bow at theirs." My mother caught a wisp of her dark hair as it danced in the wind. Her braid fell past the waistband of her skirt, where she tucked the pearl-handled switchblade that Ivy had given her long before I was born. Ivy pressed a hand to my mother's shoulder. Their accord was unspoken, haunted by promises they'd sworn to keep. Everything changed when Ivy caught fire. That morning, not long after my 15th birthday, I had spied my first summer fox from my bedroom window. The fox pranced in the morning sun as I waited for Ivy's scowl to appear on the horizon, her blonde hair trembling against her shoulder. Ivy was the only woman who knew how to reach my father's hideaway beyond the pines. We lived on the mountain's western ridge, just below the Razorbacks and the highest knolls for miles, a stretch of meadow called Violet's Run. Ivy hiked the snarled hill to our cabin every day because she and my mother could not survive without each other. It had been that way since they were girls. Theirs was the same life lived twice over, though Ivy had four boys and a husband, Ricky, who was whiskey sick and dope drunk, my father liked to say. Ivy and my mother had grown up together, gone to school together, fallen in love together. This bond was the only thing my mother had that I envied. I wanted an Ivy of my own. My father envied it too. "Bread and Ivy," he said with his preacher's smile. "That's all your mama needs to survive." My father buried himself in the things he loved. His snakes, his woods, his wife. Every time Ivy visited with her boys, he retreated to his snake shed by the cliff. He couldn't bear to share my mother with anyone. Not with Ivy. Not even with me. Ivy came early enough the morning of the burning that she had to walk by faith to find the cabin through the fog. We lived at the top of a slick dirt path, and our gray roof faded into the dying trees above it. No outsider had ever found our road, hidden behind a swamp and a stand of balsams. My father liked it that way, being half there, half not. The cabin tilted on its beams, ready to be raptured. Even without a breeze, the house's bones moaned. It was June, and I waited for Ivy at the window as I always did. When she and her three youngest boys crested the hill, I ran outside to greet them. Yesterday they hadn't come. My mother and I waited all morning before we ate the cornbread and molasses we'd prepared and folded up the picnic quilts we'd laid for the six of us to sit on in the tall grass. I wanted to know why they'd left us alone, but Ivy looked in no mood to be asked. Her skin glistened with sweat, and she made no sound as she headed toward the back of the house.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?